I'm just checking the recording level. That seems quite good. Is it that one? Ah, that's right. I think that. I just want to test that's working. I think. Oh, yes, it looks like it is. I'll just try that. I think I'll just have to assume that that is working okay, and if it isn't, I'll check it later. But.
Okay. Want that nearer me or not?
If I put it between us, it's quite sensitive actually, the microphone. You can see that it's riding up and down, so
good.
It sort of points both ways.
Yes.
Sorry, well, you were going to tell me about.
Yes, well, I won't go right back through all the story, but I was interested from the time I went to Holland in 66, I suppose, in the development of forests for public recreation. And. I spent many years as a specialist in headquarters, and when I got out to Bristol, I finally was released from headquarters and went to a region. Within weeks, I was rung up by Alistair Warman of the Arts Council in London, and he said, would I see a sculptor? And I said, well, only on condition that he comes to interpret the forest and not just plonk things, beautiful things in it. So that was agreed, and Jamie McCulloch turned up, and he was an old Etonian, the scruffiest individual you ever see. And he was in my office in Bristol, and there was a knock at the door, and I didn't realise that this was going to happen, but my boss, the conservator, came in with the minister, and Jamie was sitting there, and Jamie looked round, and he said, oh, hello, Bertie. So, he had contacts in high places. But he was an extraordinary chap, and he wanted to do this this trail. And we settled on Exeter Forest because it had great diversity. And I didn't know what we were letting ourselves in for. But it was near a city, and it seemed a likely spot. And so he went down to Exeter and began to make this remarkable series of sculptures, which were all rather delicate, but and a response, I think, to a pretty hard life that he had had. And it was, as he walked round, I've got his thesis, if you like,
the
story of Beginner's Way, as it was called, and it was as you walked round, you had a series of challenges, like you had a bridge. When you arrived at the bridge, it was vertical; you had to walk it down.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, things like that, and stepping stones, more obvious things. So we had about 50,000 visitors a year, and we refused all advertising because we realised it was so delicate, really. We were offered TV and we were offered colour supplements, and we said no.
Yeah.
But we still got 50,000 a year by word of mouth. And whilst this was going on, Alistair Warman used to come down from London occasionally, and we met in Arnolfini.
Yeah.
Jamie would come in, and we would all meet in Arnolfini and talk about money. And Jeremy appeared, and he said to me, look, you're talking about sculpture in the forest being a thing of the future, a way forward for interpreting the countryside.
Yeah.
If you really mean it, I'll help you. And he said to me, I want you to really mean it and really put your back into it, and then I will be your supporter. So I wrote him a note, which somewhere we've got a copy of what I wrote to him.
Wow.
And he lent me Rupert Martin, who was his curator. He was the director.
Yeah.
And So Rupert and I put our heads together and decided that the next stage wouldn't involve one artist. It would have to be a number of artists to make it more robust. We also decided that we would go to the Dean after some talk. We might have gone to Marlborough and gone to Savernack, which we own, but in the end we decided the Dean. And so Rupert, through all his contacts, contacted the Great and the Good, and I think we invited something like 20 artists to come to two weekends in the Forest of Dean, stay at the Speech House, and tell us what they would do if they were commissioned. And so that's how it all started. So we had the great benefit of Rupert, who was right in the thick of things as curator of Armofini. He knew the big names and the coming up and coming people.
Yeah.
So that we, and I knew all about Grisdale and its problems, and I was determined we wouldn't fall into the same trap of trying to become curators. We would leave that to a professional, and we would provide the backup, the strength, the place, and we would own the sculptures, which, I don't know what went on over there.
No, I don't either.
It was always a mess, and Bill Grant got too involved, really, as choosing people.
Was Bill working for the Forestry Commission? I've never really...
Yes, he was for a time, and then he retired and became full-time chairman, paid chairman, I think, of the Trust.
Oh, right, okay. So did you have a personal interest in art yourself? I mean, obviously you were working for the Forestry Commission.
Well, I had become more and more interested. My brother was a filmmaker. Elspeth's side of the family are very artistic. I've been making silver jewellery for 30 years, So yes, I suppose we've got it in the family. I became a member of the Museums Association years ago because we're beginning to employ artists as interpreters long before the Dean.
Yeah.
And so I could see the way forward because I could see that as scientists, our nature trails, our forest trails, were really not hitting the mark. They were terribly prosaic, and we talk about buzzards flying above and rabbits, and we could never get away from the type of science that we learned at the university. We were foresters, and we were rather wedded to pushing the forestry message of people, and I could see this wasn't really succeeding. I'm persuaded the Nature Conservancy and one other government department to fund Dartington Amenity Research Trust, and we did a small study on the 500 trails we had in Britain, and it didn't take the girl long who was doing it to discover that most people just put the trail guide in their pocket and followed the posts. So I've been thinking for a long time that what we needed was lateral thinking. We needed artists.
Yeah.
So when this came up as a possibility, I leapt at it. And I suppose the next stage was I was second in command because I was in charge of all the nice things of the West region. My boss, John Fletcher, was a great friend, and I said to him, look, we'll get nowhere unless we put money into this. We've got to, if we want money from Henry Moore Foundation and others, we must put money on the table.
Yes.
So it was agreed that we wouldn't tell headquarters, we'd just do it. And it was only £5,000, but it unlocked It unlocked quite a lot of money. I forget what Rupert managed to raise, but it was 60 or 70,000 quid, I think.
Which was quite a lot in those days, isn't it?